You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Our next guest has performed in front of sold-out audiences on Broadway playing Billy Flynn in Chicago.
Now John O'Hurley is taking the show on the road, bringing Chicago to Madison's Overture Center from Tuesday, October 1st through Sunday, October 6th.
John O'Hurley joins us now in the studio to talk about his role as Billy Flynn, as Seinfeld's Jay Peterman, and some of the other roles you may have seen him in. John, thanks for coming up here to join us.
Oh, nice to be here. Thank you very much. You've made me feel very welcome so far.
All right. Well, first, let's talk about your role in Chicago. You've played Billy Flynn before. What's it like to pick it back up and take him on the road with you?
Well, he's one of the two leading men that one of the two arrows that I keep in my quiver. The other one is King Arthur in Spamalot, the Broadway musical. So I run back and forth, and I keep both the shows alive. I've been on Broadway doing it since 2005. I did the 10-year anniversary, the 15-year anniversary, and God willing, I'll be doing the 20-year anniversary, I'm sure. I love the show dearly. I think it's one of the great leading man roles in Broadway, certainly with the greatest entrance and exit.
Well, tell us what it is you like about Billy Flynn, one of the arrows in your quiver, so there must be something there that really speaks to you.
It really does. I think he's one of the most complex and interesting men that you can play in contemporary musical theater. I think, with the support of some of the best music that Candor and Ebb ever wrote, certainly the best choreography that Bob Fosse ever did, and just an intriguing story that is timeless. It doesn't matter when you do this, because it's just about the notion of celebrity, and that's what Chicago is all about. It's set to a wonderful jazz beat and a wonderful jazz time, and Billy Flynn is as elegant as could be, but he's a very dangerous man, and there's something that I also add to him, which is also a kind of paternal quality, which I think is important.
Let's tap into that Bob Fosse choreography you mentioned. All dancing is challenging to me, but I've heard from people who know these things that Bob Fosse can be challenging even for the pros. Was there a learning curve?
Well, not as much for me, because Billy doesn't have to do as much dancing as the chorus does. The chorus, you understand the Fosse and the fingers and the hands being an extension of the body, and he was kind of a predecessor to Martha Graham and all of the great dance, you know, these wonderful the contemporary choreographers and dance structure minds. They have a certain look. You always know what a Fosse musical looks like because of the structure of the way the body is held. And that's what makes this show so perfect.
It seems a shame that you don't get to do much dancing, though, being the first winner on Dancing on the Stars. Are you itching to get out there and show him your stuff?
I still show a little stuff. It's not devoid of move, but I certainly don't have to move like the ensemble does. They're little geniuses, all of them out there.
You used to do this on Broadway, same house each night. What's it like taking it on the road and you're a different venue every week?
Well, the nice part about it is, very simply, it's beautiful to have an opening and a closing night every week. Mm. It's just there's a sense of an event for it. And I think people, when you come to a town, have the sense of that event. You know, the Wells Fargo wagon is coming down the street, and if to borrow from the Music Man. And there is that wonderful sense of one week only, and you try to get in, and it creates a buzz in the town wherever we go, and it's such a satisfying evening of entertainment that it's just nice to go into a community, get to know it a little bit, and put on a great show, and know at the end of the evening everybody's going to be on their feet. It's just a great feeling. But I tell you, there's a difference between Broadway and being on the tour and the response of the show. I find the audiences on tour much more intelligent than I do on Broadway.
Especially in Wisconsin, right?
Well, yeah.
No, I just do. I think, no, they are very, they listen, they're quiet, they're contemplative, they have a sense of the show. And when you're on Broadway, people tend to go into Broadway for a weekend, and they'll go to see three or four shows, and you just happen to be the 2:30 matinee that they're catching on the way to a 7 o'clock show. And so their attention span is just different, because they're looking for that whole weekend rather than this one night as a special event. And I find that the audiences respond differently when it's just a single event.
Now, you were talking a little bit ago about celebrity being at the core of what Chicago's about. And, you know, of course, we can relate to modern celebrity culture, just about everybody. Mm-hmm. But if someone hasn't seen the musical Chicago, tell us a little bit about the backstory. What is it about?
Well, it's based on a true story about a young chorus girl who actually ended up shooting her boyfriend. And in that murder, happened to hire a well-placed attorney who actually got her off by really turning her into a celebrity, and for no other reason than that she was let loose, and that inspired this the story of Chicago, that the idea of that we, if we turn people into celebrities, then we expect that kind of behavior from them, albeit not murder, but we expect different types of behavior from them, and we hold them accountable in different ways than we do people with normal lives, I suppose.
And you're a celebrity yourself from your Seinfeld years, Dancing with the Stars on Broadway. What's it like being a celebrity playing in this celebrity story?
Well, as I say, it's timeless. I live a different life. I mean, I'm kind of the most non-Hollywood person you'll ever meet. When the year I won the Screen Actors Guild Award, I forgot to go. I grew up in that Spencer Tracy type of world, I guess, where you just do your work and you go home and you're grateful for it. But it is. I mean, I see, certainly living in Hollywood, I mean, I see examples of bad behavior and misspent youth all around me every day. And it's sad, but that's what it brings up in our society, is that celebrity-dom doesn't go along with great behavior or a good moral code.
Now, obviously, anyone listening can hear your gorgeous voice, and obviously that's why you're on Broadway and have had, you know, this career in part. But for me, sitting right next to you, your voice is amazing. Where did you get that set of pipes?
The pipes are calling. Well, I'll tell you, my voice actually, the PS to the story is really, mine was the last voice to change in high school. I had a little pipsqueak voice all the way through my early, I would say, into 15 and early 16.
You were the boy soprano.
And even worse. It was just my little voice. It was up here like this. And I was actually in a children's theater production of Sinbad the Sailor, and I was playing the character Abu, his kind of little, it was the boy lead in the thing, but I was the boy. I mean, it was supposed to be like 10 years old. And then all of a sudden, and it was like one day, all of a sudden it went from up here to down here like this. You know, quite frankly, growing up in the late 60s, we had radio was such a huge medium back then. It was the source of all of our entertainment. Unless the occasional, you know, Dick Clark's Bandstand, American Bandstand or something you'd see like that on television. But radio, AM radio, was so important. And you had these incredible DJs that had these incredible voices. Mm-hmm. And so if you were someone like myself that was so drawn into entertainment, and I've defined myself as an actor since I was 3 years old, but you listen to these great voices and you have a tendency to want to mentor and mimic them. So I think a lot of my stylizing came really from the old DJs, probably. Mm-hmm. And then I trained classically musically in college. And so voice control was certainly part of all of that. So. I'm stuck with it.
Since 3 years old, you said you thought of yourself as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, no. In fact, when people would ask me what I wanted to be when I grew up, which is obligatory to a 3 year old, I would, with a sense of disgust that only a 3 year old can muster, I would put my hands on my hips. I would point to the black and white television in the corner of the living room, and I would say, well, I am an actor, so that's what I'm going to be. And it was the fact that I was the only one that apparently was clued into that, was a sense of mystery to me for most of my life. But ever since, I always knew from the age of 3 what I was going to do with my life. I just didn't know how to do it.
And we were just talking about your celebrated golden pipes that you have now, but you've used them to good effect also in funny ways. You've had a lot of cartoon voices among your repertoire. You were on SpongeBob SquarePants, uh-huh. The legendary
King Neptune on SpongeBob.
King Neptune.
Actually, yes, yeah.
What does he sound like?
They all have kind of as we were joking before, I've kind of cornered the market on arrogance and pomposity, so they don't really sound an awful lot different. They just come to me when they want a king or a mayor or just anyone that just could be an SOB. That's kind of what I do. King Neptune, what would he sound like? SpongeBob, that was quite a burger.
I love it.
You just asked that so your kids would hear it.
That,
right?
That,
yeah. Well,
I busted.
The reason I do that stuff is so that I develop a large body of work so that my son will have, my 6.5-year-old son will have something and his friends to listen to.
So when you tell him to take out the garbage in that voice, he listens.
Hey, Daddy, why can't you just talk normal?
We're talking with John O'Hurley about his starring role as Billy Flynn in the musical Chicago and about his versatile career, singing, dancing, and acting. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time.
I don't care about expensive things. Cashmere coats, diamond rings don't mean a thing. All I care about is love. That's what I'm here for.
And we're listening to a clip from the musical Chicago featuring our guest, John O'Hurley. He's here in the studio with us, and he will be in Madison and other parts of the state talking and performing Chicago. His character is Billy Flynn, and we're talking about that and his career both on Seinfeld, the cartoons, Dancing with the Stars, you name it. He's done a lot of things, and we're talking about all of it right now.
One question I wanted to ask you, John. During the news earlier, we were talking about your incredible travel schedule. You're hopping on planes. You're all over the place. If I don't sleep well, I worry about, can I turn it on for the show today? How do you get in the moment after this rigorous travel schedule? You must be exhausted. What does it take to turn it on each and every night?
Well, it's your job, and traveling is part of it. But I always try to do 110% every night I go on stage. And just before I set foot on stage, I always say a little prayer to myself, and it goes like this: I want to be surprised sometime tonight. And so before I go on stage, I just ask to be surprised. And if I'm surprised, then I've deepened and enriched the role. And I've done the show more than 1,000 times, and I guarantee you every single night something else has occurred to me. So over the history of the show that I've done, that I started in 2005 on Broadway, the show is infinitely more interesting, it's deeper, it's more complex, and ultimately more fulfilling for me as an actor.
So when you say surprise, you mean you discover a little bit of a facet that wasn't there
before.
There's
every night something else is new that didn't occur to me before. And it's been fast. When you were just playing that clip, I don't sing that song the way I sing it now. You just heard that off the 10-year anniversary album. I think that's what it was from. But I don't even sing that song the same way anymore. It's funny. I listen to it and I go, that's a much younger Billy.
Is that a conscious decision to sing it differently, or does it just evolve over time?
The role that I have now is a consequence of all of the things that have occurred to me in playing this character for the many years that I have. So it's a deeper, richer, much more complex character now than it ever could have been back when I started the role.
I want to ask you about something a little different. I've noticed you've written a couple of books, both of which seem to have to do with dogs.
Well, I have a new one coming out, actually, in 2 weeks.
What is the new one called?
The new one is my first children's book, and it is dog-related, too. It's called The Perfect Dog, and it's a Dr. Seuss-style treatment that I wrote last year for my son. During the National Dog Show, which I host on Thanksgiving Day. And it got about 2 million hits on YouTube, and so we've turned it into a book, and it's already been it's done quite well in the pre-sales. Comes out in about 2 weeks.
So I'm sensing a dog fan among us here.
I am a big dog fan.
You must have. Do you own dogs yourself?
Yes, I do. Although I'm on the road so much, my two dogs treat me like an intruder. But I've had a dog in my life ever since I was 4 years old. There's always been a dog in our house.
What kind of dogs do you have?
Right now we have a Cavalier King Charles, which is a common breed, very pretty faces. They're little love buckets. And then we have a breed not too many people know about, but I think if there is a perfect dog, it is the breed the Havanese, and they're a little larger than a Maltese. They're hypoallergenic. They're very smart. They take care of themselves. They are so bright and wonderful, wonderful family dogs. And we're so glad that we kind of stumbled upon the breed.
you host the big dog show. Do you ever think about showing your own dogs, or is that
no? That's an entire other world, and we don't have dogs that I would consider show quality. Mm-hmm. Although please don't record that and send that back to me, because somehow that will get to them, and that would just break their little hearts. But it was the dog show world is a different world, and I love doing this one thing that I do for NBC. It's now the number, believe it or not, it's the number one show on NBC. We get an audience of between 20 and 25 million every day, or every Thanksgiving day, that 12 to 2 slot there, and it's their number one show. It beats The Voice. It beats everything else. It's been one of the most successful pieces of programming that NBC has ever done.
And you get to meet all these dogs, right?
We have 2,000 of the best-looking dogs in America that have been, and this and Westminster and the London show are considered the big three. So the dog world is my world, but only for our Thanksgiving.
What do you think about the little dogs that go around in people's purses these days? Would you ever do that?
No, I'm not. Any dogs are wonderful companions, and they really should accessorize your life. They should add to your life as you add to theirs. And so, I'm a fan of anyone who's a fan of dogs.
Just thinking, for a traveling man, that would make it a little easier to take your dogs along with you.
Yeah, unfortunately, as I say, my dogs treat me like an intruder.
Well, I wanted to touch before we're done on your work on Seinfeld. A lot of people know you probably for your role as Jay Peterman on the show. When you started, did you know this show about nothing was going to be a big deal?
Well, the show was already half the run before I joined. I did the last four plus seasons there, and the funny story was I had hit my show on ABC. It was canceled the day before. And so I went out to dinner that night trying to take the cancellation as personally as I possibly could. In the meantime, Larry David's office had called my manager and said, we heard John's show got canceled. Would he be interested in his guest star role that's next? And I said, nah, I don't want to go guest star in somebody else's show. And I said, oh, I gave him that whole excuse. My manager finally said, just go have some fun and blow it out of your system. I did, and that was the role of Jay Peterman. And lo and behold, because of the great writing on Seinfeld, they turned it into something iconic. And there's not a day that goes by that I don't pinch myself.
And we have a clip of that. Let's take a listen to that role.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I don't even know where I'm going.
Well, that's the best way to get someplace you've never been.
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Have you been crying?
Yeah, see, this woman is a manicure.
Oh, no, it doesn't matter. Why? That's a very nice jacket.
Oh, thanks.
Very soft. Huge button flaps, cargo pockets, drawstring waist, deep bi-swing vents in the back, perfect for jumping into a gondola.
How do you know all that?
That's my coat.
You mean?
Yes. I'm Jay Peterman.
And, of course, the famous character Jay Peterman, which you have a lot in common with, I hear. What was it like working on Seinfeld? I'm sure that many people ask Seinfeld, what was it like working with John O'Hurley? But in this case, what was it like?
It was, for the last 4 years, everyone had the great reverence of what we were all part of, because we knew we were playing with the championship team in the championship season. And we also knew that it was going to be one of the, when all was said and done, it was going to be one of the great shows, and certainly it was. And I would always say to anyone who sat in my office, anyone that was an extra, anyone that was just there for the day, I said, I want you to do something for me. I want you to save the script. I want you to take notes on everything that you did, what you wore, so that you have this database in your head, because I promise you, you're going to be watching this show with your grandchildren. And I said, I can't make that promise about anything you ever do in entertainment, but you will be watching Seinfeld with your grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And so it was this wonderful sense of that we always knew that we were in the cathedral when we were there, and the four smartest actors I've ever worked with.
You've got the singing, the dancing, the acting, piano compositions, I think, right? Some CDs, the authoring. What's next? That's all? Is there another realm of creative expression you think, oh, I really got to do that next?
I don't ski.
You don't ski.
I broke my leg the first time down the hill when I was 11 years old, and that will be one of the things that will never be in my bucket list.
I want to ask, with your beautiful voice and all that you've done in the performing arts, when you're home and you've got some free time and maybe you want to sing in the shower, what do you sing?
Well, I go down to the piano, and I have a really nice piano in the house, and I'll go in, and I write a lot of music. I've composed. I've got two classical alternative albums that have done pretty well on Billboard. But I don't write lyrics. And so I'm just starting to write lyrics. And so I've written a couple of songs. And so when I sit down at the piano and I'm by myself in the house, I work on these tunes. And I hope someday to actually have music with words.
Yeah, well, we look forward to hearing them when they're there. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We have been speaking with actor John O'Hurley. He's starring as Billy Flynn in the touring production of Chicago. We've got a link to information about that performance on the Central Time Facebook page.
Coming up after the news, WPR's Glenn Moberg joins us to talk about Governor Walker's workforce initiatives announced earlier today. Stick around. There's more to come here on Central Time on the Ideas Network.
All I care about is love.
All he cares about is love.
Give me two eyes of blue, softly say,
I need you.
Let me see her standing there, and honest mister, I'm a millionaire. I don't care for any fine attire Vanderbilt might admire. No, no, not me. All I care about is love.
All he cares about is love.
I'm going to be taking up talking about physical love. Well, I'm not. Not just physical love. There's other kinds of love, like love of justice, love of legal procedure, love of lending a hand to somebody who needs you, love of your fellow man. That's the kind of love I'm talking about.